Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Borough Market Podcast, where we stroll around London's oldest food market each week to chat to the traders and producers, to find the stories behind the stalls. This week, we meet Nadia Stokes from Gourmet Goat and find out how her childhood memories have inspired her multi-award-winning street food.
You remember things from the past based on images or smell or flavours. For me, it's mostly flavours, and that's the most powerful memory trigger.
Yeah, and for a lot of people it is.
Yeah,
The smell, the taste can take you right back
to your childhood. In your tracks. And sometimes that happens to me. I sometimes feel I've got the best job in the world because this morning, the kitchen in there just smelled like my grandmother's kitchen. I mean, how awesome is that, you know? One of the things that really did form my childhood and who I am as a person was the Turkish invasion. And, you know, we lost everything, literally everything, overnight. Went from refugee camp to state-owned house, and it was pretty rubbish, to be honest with you. I was born 2 years after the invasion, but obviously I was still in the aftermath of that, and we still had the sirens, and it was just awful. But my grandmother was actually in the refugee camp, and she has some very strong memories of that. And one of the things that she did really well was keep the memories of her life before the invasion alive with food, because that's the one thing that she didn't lose, the ability to cook. Everything else was gone, all the photographs were gone. They were given a small house in a very rural part of Cyprus, part of the kind of trying to accommodate the refugees. So it was really, I mean, it was a really basic house made out of stone with an outside toilet and just land. And she made that land work, you know. We had almond trees, we had olive trees, we had carob trees, orange, lemon, vineyards. It was just amazing. And that's what I grew up with, a really basic village, rural approach towards eating. And it was just that notion that at every stage of anything, whether it was meat or the olives or the almonds, there was the ability to create something from those things, regardless of the stage. And that all the cheese, it was just amazing. Just that really kind of practical but inventive, creative way of approaching food in a really basic way. There was no waste. The idea of waste was abhorrent. The idea that you should have meat sparingly, that it lived alongside the need to have a cheese and milk or halloumi, for example. So halloumi is made out of goat's milk, therefore you had goats and therefore you ate the goat, obviously. And then when the halloumi was no longer fresh, you came up with a way in which to preserve it and have a mature halloumi, which is what actually we're going to start doing at the store.
But although Nadia's food is inspired by her childhood in rural Cyprus, Gourmet Goat's street food reflects her immigrant inventiveness to mix Eastern Mediterranean with the best of British.
I grew up in a very homogenous kind of environment in terms of the people, as in Cypriots. However, our neighbours, and you know, before Cyprus was divided, was surrounded by a multitude of cultures, including Baha'i. So a lot of people from Iran, we had a lot of people from Turkey, you know, it was a real melting pot. And as such, the cuisine reflects it, and obviously the kind of the mainland Greek cuisine as well. So one of the things that I really really fought against was the idea that we should name the dishes as after, you know, specific countries. So, for example, we have quite a lot of Cypriots and Greeks and Turks and Lebanese come to the store and say, oh, this is that, this is this. So rather we focus on the commonalities on the basis that it's a variation of the same ingredient, which I think is really kind of indicative of that region. And I think it's got a really powerful message which translates right now, because what I'm doing is I'm bringing this kind of these recipes which I've had growing up, adapted them to the British ingredients, the British kind of idea that, you know, we the sustainable ingredients, and I'm making the two work. And it's been adopted by everyone. So not just the, you know, the Greeks and the Cypriots who come and eat regularly, but also the Brits as well, who most of them haven't even had kibgo, and I'm using British kibgo. I'm not bringing it from Greece. And I think that's just a really nice message and quite relevant to our current times. Like, this is what immigrants do, and it looks really good.
Can we go back to your stall, have a little taste of some of the food? So take us through.
That's a double roast of chickpea. It's another way of preserving pulses rather than canning them or brining them. Is double roasting them. So we used to have those as snacks when we were kids. It's got a nice little crunch to it. So I thought it was one of those kind of, it was filed in the library. And I was like, I want to use that. And I thought it'd be a great way to use it with beetroot, a really common beetroot salad with tahini in Cyprus and other parts of the East Med. Nice crunch, and it works amazingly well. This salad, if we took it away, we would be lynched.
And it's got pomegranate molasses as well.
Yes.
And feta.
And the feta. And we do actually use some of the curd occasionally, depending on what's available from Ellie's Dairy in the market, and they make amazing curd because we use their meat, so we also use their curd as well. This is probably the one that's closest to my childhood, because it's a very kind of wholesome salad, and most of the time we had a vegetarian diet. So lentils, we've got lentils, chickpeas, nigella seeds. Nigella seeds is used quite a lot in baking. It's got a really lovely toasted flavour, which I wanted to give to this salad. And raisins, tahini, lots of lemon, and rocket. We wanted to use like a kind of a traditional British base ingredient, so cabbage. And we loved the idea of combining it with sumac, because it's one of my favourite spices. It's really lemony. It's great. Not something you cook with, it's something that you would season with.
Nadia's grandmother's attitude towards waste has become one of the most important values driving gourmet goat.
I think what's unique to what we're doing, though, is that we're taking things like that have been discarded, so like rose veal and British goat and the whey, and we're saying, no, please don't get rid of this stuff. This tastes phenomenal, and let's show you guys how we do it.
So tell us why people want to get rid of rose veal.
I think actually the reason why, I mean, because there was a time when people didn't want to get rid of it, and that's kind of part of the problem, is that it was very, very popular a long time ago in the 80s. I feel like it shouldn't be a long time ago, but it is. And then when it became very popular, more people wanted it, and you know, the demand and the supply were slightly, you know, there's a bit of a disconnect there. But also it meant that bad practices were adopted. And now the RSPCA has come out and say, actually, you need to be eating more veal. And this is what it's going to be called, is rose veal, to distinguish it from, you know, the veal that people used to think of. And rose veal just means that it's good, it's ethical.
And rose also refers to the colour, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. So it means that this is an indicator that the animal has been fed well, because it's that really kind of healthy meat, and it's been reared in a way which is ethical, and that's what all people want really when they're eating good meat,
because it's pink.
It just shows you that it's a very, very healthy meat, and it tastes phenomenal, really good.
But having said that, it's called Gourmet Goat, and you are famous for your goat, and you've won all your awards for your goats.
Yeah.
Tell us about goat.
Yeah, it's funny, because like now, you know, of course, we started off with goat, and it was the basic premise that, you know, why is it that we can't get goat in this country, and we've got such a thriving dairy industry? And so right now, you know, we still sell more goat than anything else, and it tastes phenomenal. We only work with small farmers or rearers that we know. And it's going from, you know, from strength to strength.
And that's a really important thing for you, isn't it, to support producers, support farmers. Which came first, the farmer or the goat?
If I'm perfectly honest, it's the goat. Because first, I was led to it by my desire to recreate a flavour memory. And then, of course, I wanted to source it from the right place. But what we soon realised, actually, that flavour memory is also associated with a certain type of rearing, because meat tastes better when it's been reared well. And so it soon became apparent, actually, there's some incredible farmers, incredible rearers in this country, and we're so privileged to be working with them, and they've been awesome. So there's all these ways of making sure that you extended the life of something as well, which is what the approach we have here. So we try and use waste, well, other people's waste, which we don't regard as waste. So, for example, cheesemakers as well. And we worked with a cheesemaker who used to make halloumi, or still does. And so the whey is typically discarded, but actually the whey contains a lot of nutrition and is actually really good for you. So he started making a whey cheese, which is very traditional in Cyprus, called anari, and it's kind of like a ricotta. And then we started using some of the whey from Ellie's Dairy as well to make our own cheese. Or some of the other traders, they started, some of the veg, we made our own piccalilli, because pickles go really well with our food. I don't know what this approach is, like you have to buy everything pristine looking. It's the way veg is, it just looks a bit battered sometimes.
But actually pickling is something that we've all been doing across the world for years.
It's so good.
Centuries, with leftovers.
I know, and with meat in fact as well. You can pickle meat and some of it tastes really fantastic. It's just about being resourceful and having the interest in to create something which, I don't know, it just makes everything worthwhile, really.
And the croutons you get from the bakery here?
Yeah. So we were offered leftover bread in which to make croutons. And this is an ancient approach about preserving bread. In fact, it's the first biscuit. It's double baking bread to preserve it, and it lasts for ages, and you revive it in a similar way of like you would rehydrate a tomato, or a sun-dried tomato, for example. So what we did, we slow roasted veg which were past their best. They were fine, really good. And so they released all their natural juices with olive oil, and then we put in a vinegar reduction to balance those sweet flavors, and when it came out of the oven, all the croutons went in to absorb all the flavour. So it was kind of like a Greek panzanella. And we just couldn't keep up with demand. And who would have thought? She turned around to people, was like, "You're eating stale bread." It's not stale bread. I suppose it kind of is, but it's, you know.
It's delicious.
And Gourmet Goat's simple attitude to food and waste hasn't gone unnoticed. Nadia talked me through some of the awards that she and husband Nick have won in the last 2 years.
We first got our 5 stars from Time Out, and then I think people began to realise where we were, certainly locally. The BBC Food and Farming Awards was this absolutely different ballgame, because this was a massive national competition, well, not competition, it was a national awards. And I think, as I remember it, 670 street food takeaways were up for nomination. So obviously when we made it to the final three, for at the time, our Kid Goat dishes, we just couldn't believe it. We really couldn't believe it. And there's some really fantastic people there doing some really awesome things. And there we were. And Angela Hartnett came and Paula McIntyre came down to judges.
And what is lovely about that? It means that there is so much amazing food out there. All over the country.
I know, it is pretty amazing. I think what the great thing about the BBC Food and Farming was they really seemed to have got the balance right between talking about the importance of supporting the farms and the farming industry, but also the quality of food that follows on from that. And that was really humbling, really, to see. And all the efforts that people are going to come up with a fantastic produce.
And, of course, it gives food the story, which is what we all love.
Yeah, of course.
Let's go back to your thousands of awards. So, Slow Food London.
Yeah, I mean, Slow Food, the concept of Slow Food is one which we naturally aligned ourselves with anyway, because it's pretty much what we are. And we actually became part of Slow Food, I think, within a month of trading. And it was really helpful to be aware of Slow Food, but also just they're very helpful in terms of determining what other suppliers are out there, what other farms. Yeah, exactly, on the networking front. And obviously they thought that we were reasonably good too, and they gave us the award.
It ticks all the boxes. And then, of course, we come to the Urban Food Awards, which is Borough Market's own awards, and you were the winner of the Sustainable Street Food and the Best Surplus Food Initiative.
Yeah, that's right.
And these are given, sponsored by the Mayor of London, which is such an important thing, isn't it?
Well, it really is. I mean, actually, the Mayor of London created his own category, because what he wanted to do was send out a very strong message as to what he regarded as important, as well as honouring and rewarding people who have worked hard to produce good quality food. He's also saying that actually we need to address a major waste in the capital. So he created this one category, and he's announced the winner.
And of course it is a really important award, isn't it, because the food industry in the capital is one of the biggest employers. Because of course it's so vast now, it reaches into so many people's lives. So to win that in a place like Borough Market, which is, I mean, its main message is sustainability now, isn't it?
No, absolutely, absolutely. And it really just, I think for Borough Market as well as for us, it sends such a great message of support and just basically saying what you're doing is right, and people want you to continue doing this, and the mayor wants you to continue doing this. A lot of all the hard work that the market and ourselves have put in was rewarded.
And you can see that by the queues out here at lunchtime. It isn't just a marketing message. I know. Who would have thought it?
Yeah, people queuing up for Kid Go. I think, if I'm perfectly honest, not in a million years did I expect it to be. I think, you know, this is the first time today that I think Olivia's not been serving, and it's just been, it's been phenomenal. The response and just the love of good food, and
love of good food, but also the whole deal. It's the whole story that people buy into. It's not that they don't know what you do.
I think inevitably with these sorts of things, these awards really do bring out backstory. And the backstory for many is what keeps us going. For me, it was preserving my heritage and everything that I had learned through my grandmother, and that absolute total respect for land, produce, and farming. When we won the BBC Food and Farming Awards, we had people travel from across the country because they had heard us on the radio or seen us on TV, and it meant so much to them. And we still have people coming down saying, I heard you, what you said was just so lovely.
Isn't that lovely?
It is.
And people incredibly gratifying.
I know. Really, actually, quite satisfying to do something with your hands and create something, and something that people really appreciate. And obviously, at the same time, addressing, you know, a serious issue in the dairy industry and work with some fantastic farmers. We know some great people and some really wonderful stories behind them as well. So the more we do well, the better they do as well. So
brilliant. Well done. Thanks for listening to the Borough Market podcast. You can find much more about the traders by going to boroughmarket.org.uk. And do subscribe to the podcast. We'll see you next week for more stories behind the stores at London's most famous market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.